This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And now, from beyond our dimension, this is the Jeff Mara Podcast. Here's Jeff.
Today's guest is Robin Lansong, transformational speaker, visual artist, medicine singer, and medical health intuitive. She has had multiple near-death experiences during the Rhodesian War in 1977 when she was 8 years old, when she was called back to life by the medicine song of a rural Zimbabwean woman. It opened her own medicine songs, and she has given singing medicine to over 16,000 people. That is amazing. Robin, thank you for joining me, and welcome.
Yes, thank you for inviting me, Jeff.
So, Robin, if you don't mind, I would like to start first with your NDEs before we get into medicine, singing, and other things. Mm-hmm. Can we start perhaps even on the day that your first NDE happened?
Yeah, I'll give just a little bit of context so people can understand how a white American child got into Zimbabwe. So I was growing up in a family system that wasn't aligned in terms of being able to protect me and really cherished me. So there was a man who spotted me as an unprotected child. Again, 1977, this is before Child Protective Services was even formed. There was no national system to report a missing child. So it was pretty easy for him to abduct me. He came to school at the end of the school year, end of the day, abducted me. And I knew immediately that my life was in danger. So he drugged me. Took me out of the country. Again, people have questions about that, but in 1977, that was not very difficult. There's still I just looked at some numbers, 1.5 million kids abducted in the US and human trafficked in the US today. So in 1977, nobody was even counting these numbers. So he took me to what was then Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe. Reason to believe he was going to be a mercenary in that war. They were recruiting because they didn't have enough, the white government was recruiting, so they didn't have enough soldiers to fight their side. So I think he took me with him just pretending that I was his daughter, and in his mind, I was his daughter. Once he had to go into the field, into battle, once his training was done, he got rid of me to another man, and that man took me on a bus. The bus broke down, and again, this is rural, now Zimbabwe, so dirt roads, in the middle of the height of the war. And so I had to get out and walk with the other people, but I had been assaulted by the abductor, so I couldn't walk fast, and he just left me behind. And so there I was, a white American girl in rural Zimbabwe, and just thinking, okay, this is how I'm going to die. I'm going to just die in the bush here. And what happened next is that a truck full of soldiers came along, and they were fully armed, and I didn't understand the context of the war, but I thought, this is how I'm going to die. It's going to be much faster, much quicker, and they're just going to shoot me, and this is going to be the end of my really 8 miserable years. So I'd been in a lot of abuse and a lot of trauma already, so I wasn't attached to being alive. So they ended up picking me up, literally, putting me on the truck with them, and took me to what I now know was the Thule Block, like right on the border between Zimbabwe, Botswana, and South Africa. and they had an argument over whether to shoot me or to help me. And I really like to pause at this point in getting across my experience, because these are some of the most extreme soldiers in the war. And one of them, you know, saw me as an unprotected child and chose to defend me against the other soldiers. And so he took me out of there and took his, you know, risked his life in terms of the other soldiers might get mad at him and kill him. And he took me to the border to South Africa and dropped me off at a village he thought would be sympathetic to a white child. And so I spent the night alone by myself after he dropped me off. And in the morning, I heard the singing of the women. And my singing is different than theirs, but these women ended up taking me in. And so what they did for me is they opened my own medicine songs, my ability to hear the song inside people, song that people were born with, and the song in the land. So I'm just going to share a little bit of that first opening of the singing that they did for me. Shea Yeho Am Nam Neyaham Hea Yahi Am Neyaham My Ho. So they saw me, they welcomed me in, they fed me, they gave me water. And eventually the children really welcomed me in. And again, this is very rural area, so they had not seen or touched a white child probably. So the children took me to the fire circle and put black ash on my face and my skin as a way to have me belong, have me be more like them. And one of the eldest girls told a story about me. It was in Venda, so I couldn't understand it word by word, but I understood the idea is that she was saying, I see you, and this is how you came to us. So she made up a story of how I belonged, how I came to them. And coming from a childhood of very severe not belonging, this was a really extraordinary experience of welcoming into a place that was connected to being a community, was connected to that tribal ancestry, was connected to the land. And so what happened next is one of the women really deeply welcomed me in. Again, I had been assaulted by the abductor, so my ribs were broken. I was highly traumatized, highly defended. And she sang to me, Shea Yeho, I am na. And my whole body relaxed in her singing medicine, and I literally melted in her arms. And when she looked me in the eye, it was the first mothering I had really experienced. And so I thought, this is my new life. I belong here. I'm part of. And they were teaching me the songs and how to plant in the field. They grew lots of corn. That's their main meal. And I didn't understand the context of the war. So one day I wandered too far from the homestead, the village, by myself to a creek where the women had put clay on my bruised ribs to try and help heal my ribs. And I didn't know that a battle was starting nearby. So I was at this creek by myself, and I looked up and saw a soldier. And he was so close to me, I could see, you know, every detail. And he was scouting the perimeter. I now have kind of gathered more of the history. And so when he saw me, he immediately brought up his gun. And when his gun barrel became just a circle, I knew he was directly aimed at me, and that he wasn't open to the way the other people in the village were. So he was a black soldier, just like the people I was with. So I couldn't understand, as an 8-year-old, why are you wanting to shoot me when the other people were welcoming me in? So again, he was so close, I could see his finger on the trigger. And I, in my being, I was praying for mercy. I was praying for him to have mercy and see me as a human being and not just his target. But I watched him pull the trigger. And what I understand now is that when you're that close, the scope is off. So he was probably aiming here, but since he was so close, the scope was off. The bullet grazed the top of my head. It blew me off my feet. I was slammed down to the ground, and I began dying of bleeding out, of blood loss. And immediately I was above my body, looking down. And it was so sad to see my body just a mess with the blood. And I was watching my blood flow towards the creek. And I was knowing that there was something vital that was losing momentum, losing pulse in my body. And from my view from above, I was watching my heart dim down, quiet down. And it was just watching in a way it was peaceful, but it was too quiet in my body. And what happened next is that I was immediately drawn back down through my body, into my heart, out the back of my heart. And I was traveling very quickly. And the grace that was happening was that I no longer had to fight for my life. It was done. It was over. And this greater source was holding me and taking me to a place where I knew I didn't have to work so hard to be alive anymore. I could let go of all the ways I defended my life. So I crossed over to this other side. I met many beings. First was two sisters. They were black skinned. And what I now understand is that the two women who had taken care of me, their presence was already on the other side. I didn't understand that several days later that they would die also in the war, and that they were already there to greet me, even though they wouldn't die for 2 days. So they greeted me, they took care of me, and they showed me that I could go home the easy way. This great glowing golden sphere, I could go home the easy way. But I wasn't done yet. I had just found this family. They had named me Aisha, and I wasn't ready to die. And so I fought going home. And that put me through all these other experiences of dropping down into this field where I had this feeling, this fear that something was really devastating was going to happen to my tribal family. And in that field, I was running around looking for them. And I was afraid that they were down and not able to respond. So I searched for them in panic until I laid down in acceptance. I laid down that I couldn't control what was going to happen in the future. And after I accepted I couldn't control what was going to happen in the future, I met a being who had a beard and a sheep herder staff, and he was wearing a robe, and he was the presence of peace. And when I moved towards him, I knew I could go home to source and that I could belong in a greater family. And he bent down and he put his forehead to mine, and I could see as he sees. And his face also changed to a lion. So this is my artwork I did of when his face changed to a lion. And he was in the whole universe, and he connected me to the matrix, the living lines, where we are all like a gem. And I could visit all these gems, whether it was a mouse or a frog or a mountain or a person. I could just travel through the whole universe and meet all the other brilliant life forces that we are connected to in the matrix. And when I came back from that vision that he was showing me of the ways we are interconnected, again, his presence looked like a man, but he kept shifting what his face looked like from a lion to people that I loved, to people that I didn't know. And he showed me that we can open our hearts to strangers just as we can open our hearts to people that we know well and love. He took me to the view above my body, and there my African mama had found my body. She was stopping the blood flow, and she was wailing into the sky. And I felt sad that I couldn't respond to her anymore. My face was, of course, lifeless, and my blood was on her dress. But I felt lots of peace and acceptance. I no longer was attached to that form, but I was wanting to let her know I'm totally fine. I'm free of pain, and my guide here is going to help me home. So we began to rise up, and as I rose up in the tunnel and knew that I was going home to my source, I could hear her wailing change to singing. And at a certain point in my crossing over, I felt her singing. She had called on the ancestors in the land, and the ancestors joined her. And so I was going home to source, going home to peace, going home to what I call the Great Heart, where I believe I was sung into being by this Great Heart. I believe we all are a seed syllable sung into being as a song, and that we come into form through this song. So this song of her and the ancestors touched me, and it stopped me from going home all the way to source. And when that stopped me, it reminded me that I hadn't done my purpose, and that her singing and their singing was reminding me that my purpose was to sing to people, to call them home, just as she was calling me home. And again, I'm going to give an attempt to sing the magnitude of what that singing was like for me in that moment.
This episode is brought to you by Liquid IV. Feeling thirsty? You might already be dehydrated. Enter Liquid IV. Behind every great tasting sip is a science-backed formula of electrolytes and nutrients made to quickly replenish fluids lost from sweat. Every stick is powered by 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. Redefine the refresh with Liquid IV, also available in sugar-free. Tear, pour, live more. Visit us at liquidiv.com.
The way I am. Show ya ho I am. Show ya he I am. And they were reminding me of a calling, a deep calling, to come back to life, to join the choir of medicine singers, and be the one that could be of service to help people feel their homecoming to themselves, just as they were doing for me. So I came back to my body. And when I came back, she was holding me. Others from the village had gathered around. One of the men who was very dear to me, he gathered me up and took me back to the village. And they were singing calling songs to be medicine, so that I needed to heal and recover. And they got me in a hut, and they were singing blessing on the top of my head. And I believe they were getting the hatred that came with the bullet off me, so that I didn't go through life confused and bitter. Because it would be very easy to be bitter having been shot during a war. And they were laying plants of medicine plants on me to help me feel more solid. And at that point, I could know their thoughts, know their wishes. I was already quite intuitive from having survived so much trauma. But now with this death experience, I could just know everything. Nobody needed to tell me their thoughts or their feelings. I just directly knew. So they took care of me. And there was definitely still danger around the village. And I was very weak from having had that much blood loss. There was no hospital nearby to take me to. So they just cared for me and loved me and sang to me. And as best as I can put together, about 2 days later, from my accounts and other people's accounts, the soldiers came back. And in that time period during the war, if people didn't align with that side of the that side of the faction, agree with them and agree with that leadership, then they were massacred. And so the shooting started. I was in a hut and one of the other mothers hid herself. And I could hear the screams and the shooting and the falling down of everyone that I had grown to love and who had taken care of me and had been my family. And I learned again how to shut down, how to become numb. And so this other mother, she grabbed me on her hip when the shooting had stopped and ran out of the hut and was trying to get to safety, trying to escape. And we didn't make it very far before she was shot from behind. And so I went down with her. And again, I had just died of blood loss 2 days before, so I was very weak. And I tried to get up and pull her with me, but she was yelling at me to keep going. And she had never yelled at me before. So I did what she was commanding and I ran. And it's been the hardest thing for me to recover from, that I couldn't pull her with me to safety. And other people, other war survivors, other trauma survivors understand that survivor guilt, that I might be the only one who made it through that war. We don't know, we haven't found other survivors. So I got up and I ran as far as I could before I started bleeding again. I was running down a sand hill, trying to get to the cover of these large fig trees, trying to get to the river. And I literally just collapsed forward because I was so, my blood pressure was so low. I was bleeding again. And I fell face forward in the sand. Mm-hmm. And it's a strange thing to say that I died again. But the purpose of that was that I wasn't moving. So when the soldiers were scouting the area, they didn't shoot me again because I wasn't moving and I was face down. And so when I crossed over that time, I had an entirely different experience. And when I became aware again, I was in a very white landscape, and there was, where I was white, and the horizon line was white, but I could see a horizon line. And there was a song being sung to me, and the song was, "You will live, you will live." And I thought, did I die again? And I wanted to know who was singing to me, and so I said telepathically, "Who's singing to me?" And so I was literally moved by this presence, by this force, closer. And I got to a veil, and I could see the veil, but I couldn't see beyond the veil. And this very powerful being showed me in my mind's eye a record, and that the record was, the stylus was kind of skipping on a part that was damaged in the record. And then they took the record off and they showed it to me close up, and I could see the deep groove in the beginning of the record. And I said, "This record is damaged, it should be thrown away." And the voice said, "The wounded places are how I find you so I can love you. The wounds are the opening so that this magnificent presence could put its full loving kindness in my being." And so I said, "So I shouldn't be thrown away because I'm damaged?" And he said, "No, I'm finding you to help you." And so he showed me that out of destruction comes new creation. And again, in my mind's eye, he showed me two level land masses, and he was crushing them together into make a mountain. And when the mountain was fully formed, it was so beautiful. And he said to me, "Shall I destroy the plain so you can have the beautiful mountain?" And I said, "I don't like the destruction part. Can we have both?" And again, he said, "Your limited human view can't see the big picture." And he was showing me again the mountain being disintegrated grain by grain, coming down to make the beach, or slides coming down. And that even though the mountain had just been created, it was being destroyed also. And he said, "Shall I destroy the mountain so you can have the beach?" And again, I said, "I don't like the destruction part. Can we just have it be nicer?" And he said, "I'll keep hold of the big picture. But again, out of the things that break us down, break us open, this new creation that we cannot see at the time of crisis is being opened up. And he showed me an image of myself running in the woods as a teenager. And he said, "You will live. I am making sure that you will live. And you will grow up, and somehow this will become a gift that you give to others." And I couldn't understand that at the time, but I said, "I'll let you hold the big picture." And he said, that's what I do. And then he removed the veil and I saw him. And his presence was so grand, so big. And I knew that he could destroy and create with the tiniest movement of his finger. And his skin was kind of a golden blue color, and his hair was black, and he had a bun on his head. And there was all this beautiful jewels and gifts around him, but I wasn't looking at those because I was so focused on his face. And that he is so powerful, I couldn't believe that I got to be in his presence, and that the smallness of me got to be in the greatness of him. So he returned me back to my body. And again, I was face down in the sand. I had dirt in my mouth. My arm had been caught under me. My neck felt like it was really damaged. And he was speaking to me when I was back in this realm. And he was saying, "You will live. Pull forward now." And I thought, "I don't want to live. All the people that I love just died. I have no reason to go on." But literally, he was commanding me, "You will get to the well and somebody there will help you." So it was through his will, it was through being a drop in the ocean of him, that he commanded me to crawl forward inch by inch. And I've had the honor to go back to Zimbabwe and find that exact spot, find the tree, find the sand, and find the well that I crawled to, where the next day a woman named Mia Lucy, a native woman from that area, she found me half dead, washed the blood off my face, put me on her back as if I was her baby, and took me back to her homestead. She hid me from other people because it was dangerous for her. She ended up taking me across the Limpopo River, delivering me to the nearest white farming family, who then delivered me to a hospital in Polokwane. From there, they figured out that I was American, and they kind of intimidated and interviewed me enough to find out where my American family was. I was delivered back from an, we haven't figured out what kind of agent delivered me back on the plane, back to the airport on the East Coast, where my father picked me up. And then I was taken back to my family. And sadly, they were not people who could be with the truth or be with any difficulty. So they told me, literally told me, "Shut up, don't ever talk about this again." They never asked me what happened. My parents are both crossed over, and I left home as soon as I could, and we literally never had a conversation about this. My siblings are not receptive to hearing about it either. And so I had to do, you know, as many trauma survivors have to do, I had to repress it all down. And that is why I had several more death experiences from the stress of repressing it down when I was a teenager. When I was 19, I left home, went to college, never went back home, and really began my healing process at that point, because I was no longer in such a suppressed family system, and I could begin to tell my story, do my healing work. And I really did decades of trauma resolution, and then it's become my privilege to become trained in doing trauma resolution for other people. Through craniosacral therapy, through understanding polyvagal theory, and to my amazement, the singing medicine that was opened up in me from the death experience and from my mama's turns out to be very helpful to other people's coming home to themselves and their trauma resolution.
Robin, thank you for sharing your extraordinary life with us. You are an amazing singer. I loved hearing you sing. Can you translate those words for us?
It's not so much directly translates kind of into English, but I'll just give the gist of it is, let the land nourish you, let your heart be held by Pachamama, by earth, and relaxing back into your true nature, relaxing back into our innate goodness, and trusting ourselves that we can breathe in and breathe out life. We can allow ourselves to heal from whatever we have lived through. All the places that we have been broken down are the places that we have been broken open. And so it's very unique when I sing to each person. Sometimes it's very nurturing and it's a lullaby. Sometimes it's very fierce and calling people up to their next level of belonging, to their next level of acknowledging and owning their power and their potency.
I was closing my eyes when you were singing, and one of the times I could almost like feel it, like feel like some type of energy in my body. It was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. And that's been amazing to me too. Like I said, that I work with people around the world online, and I am amazed how much people can feel and how much shift it does. Physiologically, structure-wise, people have had neck adjustments while I'm singing to them. And it's really very humbling, and it's an incredible privilege to be able to pay forward the gifts that I was given.
Have you ever made audio recordings of your singing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went down to LA a bit ago, and we did some really great audio recordings that will be actually out on my website within probably the next month.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
When you were on the other side the first time and you ran in, well, I don't know about ran, but you encountered people from the village who would later be killed. I think they were sisters. Mm-hmm. Do you think you were encountering their higher selves at that point?
That's the way I make sense of it. And I didn't even understand it for the longest time. It actually was through giving a public talk and the questions people asked that I suddenly got it of, those were my mamas. And they looked younger. Many people report that about when you meet somebody on the other side, they look younger. So it took me an incredibly long time to connect it, that even though they weren't going to die until 2 days later after my seeing them there, but yes, I believe that was their higher self, their essence. Because I believe a part of us is still on the other side. It's best if at least 80% of us is here. I work with a lot of people who they never really chose to incarnate because maybe they weren't born into a family that was very loving, or they had an experience where they went up and out. So if people are only about 30% here, their bodies don't function very well. Everything they try doesn't work out. Relationships don't really thrive because people can't feel and find their energy body here. So that's one of the things I love to sing to, is helping people get more here, grounded in their embodiment, because being up and out might be very creative or intuitive, but it doesn't really bring manifestation here on earth.
Now, one of the beings that you met kind of sounds like a shepherd and kind of sounds like Jesus. Who was that being?
You know, I like to leave it to everybody's interpretation because so many, I work with so many people around the world and they have their own interpretation. I wasn't raised Christian and I certainly wasn't raised Hindu on the being white in America. And it took somebody reflecting it back to me when I said, yeah, the sheepherder's staff and his beard and the robe. And they looked at me and they said, the Lord is my shepherd. And I said, oh. I just was experiencing it as an eight-year-old. And so since then, I really have dropped into my relationship with Jesus. And it, some people might be offended by this, but he has a great sense of humor because I dialogue with him all the time. And he's very funny. And for a long time, he helped me in my sessions until he said, oh, I'm just going to show up and watch you work because you're doing great by yourself. So yeah, being in that really direct, original relationship that's beyond some of our ideas and ideologies we've built up in religion. And I feel a little bit sad when people's religious ideas gets in the way of their own direct experience with that presence, with that loving being, with that wisdom that's available.
What about the other being that was blue-skinned and very powerful?
Mm-hmm.
Who do you suppose that is?
My interpretation is that is Shiva.
Hmm.
And the creation and destruction. And again, my very direct relationship with him. I don't hear and speak with him as often, but when I'm with other people who are practicing, I have a friend who comes and does the recitations in Sanskrit, and that really opens me up again directly to my relationship with Shiva. And I feel like everything really bold that I do, like bold risks that I take or some of my art, I feel that is directly delivered to me from Shiva, through Shiva.
Now, you use the words matrix, and some of the conversations I have with people is that we live in a simulation or a matrix. Are you saying that as well?
I've worked so hard to get grounded and be present here in this reality. So any of the models that kind of speak of this being an illusion doesn't really feel like of great service to me, because I work every day to meditate down to get here and to be here and commit to this lifetime. So yeah, I think everybody needs to honor their worldview and do what works for them. But I really like to commit to relationships, to being here, to sensation, to body. You know, I love eating. I love being present to the gift of what it is to be a physical human being here. But yes, when I crossed over, it was like a beautifully organized spider web and these golden lines. And I've done my best to try and draw it several times. This is a close-up of a bigger drawing that I did. So I keep attempting to draw the magnitude of what I saw during my death experiences. And that's what so much of my art is inspired by. And so again, for me, it's all about relationships. And do my visions make me more relational to all life, to all beings?
You mentioned that you have to work to be here. So are you saying that if you didn't, you would just leave, or what?
When I get an astrology reading, she let me know I have no earth signs. So I have a lot to bring, a lot to manifest in terms of my divine assignment. So I think I would just get I would be less effective as a healer, and my singing medicine would be maybe more etheric, but not as potent. My art, like, I just need to be here to bring this stuff to fruition. So yeah, that's my commitment. I'm not sure I would die. I actually regularly do meditations, what I call dying meditations. And it's more about not getting attached to outcomes, not getting attached to how I think things should be, but just clearing everything out, being directly with divine source, and just asking again, what's my assignment? What am I here to do? How am I to be of service? Continually refreshing my instructions about my assignment of service.
In listening to you, I feel like you got a gift of being at least more empathic than you were previously. Did you get any other gifts from your NDEs?
Mm-hmm. And first I'll add to that and say that doing trauma resolution is the strongest path I know of to open up your intuition, open up clarity and being a healthy empath. So I don't take things on from people. I work with thousands of people, and I actually teach how to be a healthy empath in my classes. So So the singing medicine, the visionary art, the just being able to read people. And my particular intuition is about reading people's body, their physical health. I don't so much see auras, I see literally inside of people. So I did a lot of training in anatomy, because at first I was seeing this area of someone's body, but I didn't understand like what organs there, how will that affect function. So I picked a massage school and a craniosacral training that had the deepest neurobiology understanding, anatomy understanding. And I also am able to see people's history as it's relevant to their health and their choices. So I might see a little video of something that's really relevant that needs compassionate witness. And so I really like to deliver that without, it's important to me that I'm not invasive to anyone or that they don't feel like I'm seeing too much. So I usually frame it, if I get a whole movie of somebody's life, I usually start asking them questions to let them reveal to me how much they want to have witnessed. But that's, it's just cuts to the chase. When I was doing in-person sessions, I didn't really need to do much of an intake because I could just glance at somebody and know like, oh, you fell off a horse, you got dragged by the horse, it really shifted your pelvis, and now we need to like shift your ilium back into place in relation with your sacrum. And then I'll say this as gently as I can, and they'll be like, how could you know that? I'm like, well, I saw a horse. I saw a kind of an x-ray vision of your pelvis and knew that it was related to the horse incident.
It's kind of cool. So
and it's really quick. Like, that's what I love, is it's super efficient. We can just cut to the chase. I do 5-person groups where I work with each person for 10 minutes. And the singing and my intuition can just, boom, we can just get right to it and get to transformation for people.
I don't know if whoever's watching knows that I'm also a chiropractor. I keep my license, although I don't practice. But it's kind of cool to talk about this because you're basically doing what chiropractors do in a different way, maybe a little more gradual and subtle ways, but working with the cranial sacral pump and cerebral spinal fluid, which can be very powerful.
I used to call my work subtle medicine, until this big, huge, hefty guy that like built rock walls, he's like, that almost knocked me off my chair when you sang to me. And I was like, maybe I shouldn't call it subtle. So literally sometimes people will have a neck adjustment, or like when I would be working with children and the parent would be sitting in the room, they'd be like, oh my God, my neck after 20 years just shifted. Thank you very much. So that, like you say, that dropping into the potency, and I'm trained as a biodynamic craniopsychotherapist. So getting back to that original rhythm in the body. And as you know, when our craniosacral fluid and our breath and our heart rate and our lymph rhythm, our digestive rhythm are all in sync with each other, then we have this deeper sense of well-being and we don't get so knocked over by life. So that's why I meditate so much, is because I'm always coming back to my midline, coming back to that original corrective force in the body so that I can be that presence, be that medicine with other people.
I want to go back to being an empath for a moment, because I had a previous guest, and after doing some research about being an empath, I saw on YouTube what is huge is empaths helping people with narcissists. Your empaths destroying narcissists. Do you do any of that type of work?
What I love to do is help highly empathic people learn boundaries, because, and I've lived this out myself, like empaths and narcissists get drawn together, because a narcissist is, and I want to say this well, like people with narcissist tendencies, that's not all of who they are. And there's a lot online that likes to just kind of trash them and make them really bad people. But everybody's got a full spectrum of themselves. So I don't like putting anybody in the trash can. So it's a really difficult thing in terms of healing narcissism, because it's about accountability. A narcissist needs to go back to the point where they started blaming other people and go down a different path and start taking self-responsibility instead of blaming everybody else for their difficulties or their feelings. And they need to be willing to drop into really coming home to hard emotions, rather than kind of replaying lots of surface stories. It's about dropping in, being so courageous to drop into that which needs to be witnessed in ourselves. So they tend to get attracted to highly empathic, codependent people. And the highly codependent empaths love to try to heal a narcissist. And like I say, I'm talking from experience. I've done this road many times, but now I've gotten really trained in this. So I spot the signs right away, which is like the love bombing. You're the greatest. You're the one who's I've never been seen like you have been seen me. So it's just kind of like a lovely, interesting dance that I've learned to just dial down and sit back and try and teach other empaths, more often women, to just stay in your own energy field, stay in your own boundaries, stay in your own skin. Don't get caught up in the love bombing because it's very charming. And just let the other person do their own healing process, to not jump in. I don't actually heal anyone. I offer transformation. I offer being witness, compassion. And then people do their own transformation. Because as you know in your work, if you take credit for people's healing, you also have to take credit when they don't heal. So it's very much about just staying in my own center, my own midline, offering what I do, and letting people make of it what they will in their time.
At a young age, during this war, you became numb, most likely numb to life. How did you unlearn that behavior?
And that's where the magnificence of the love that I received is that they taught me what real mothering is. And like I say, there was one man who was, I trusted and felt safe with him. And so that belonging, even though I had to shut it down and become numb again, it gave me some knowledge of what it is to be in community, what it is to be in relation, what it is to be a child in safety, even though it changed so drastically and tragically. So I believe I didn't settle for less because I knew what real love was. And so in my healing process that I began when I was kind of really more when I was 20, I actually went into a trauma treatment unit. And so I did EMDR. I did lots of talk therapy. I did so much receiving of body work, receiving craniosacral therapy, receiving massage, going to yoga class, Tai Chi class, eating well. And I cannot emphasize enough that healing our adrenals and giving herbal adrenal support is absolutely essential part of trauma recovery. So if you want to see a herbalist, a acupuncturist, some craniotherapists might have knowledge about it, some chiropractors have knowledge about it, but a functional medicine doctor, really addressing your body on a cellular level is going to make it so that you can actually move forward in your trauma resolution. If your adrenals are so fatigued that you can't rise to the occasion without just getting exhausted, then your trauma resolution process is really slowed down, and your reactivity and hypervigilance and high startle is going to just remain there, and it's very discouraging. So seeing a practitioner about herbal adrenal support is the greatest gift people can give themselves in moving their healing forward.
If you had a friend or a client that was grieving over the loss of a loved one, what type of advice do you give?
That grief needs movement. For myself, when I was going through a divorce, I would put on a really meaningful song to me every morning. It was a Michael Ketterer song, and it just moved my heart. And so I would put that song on, and I would dance, and I would move, and I would cry, and I would just put it on repeat over and over again until I felt like I was done crying for that morning. And then the next day I would get up, I would start my day, I would put that song on repeat until I didn't need to do it every day. And so the biggest thing about grief is self-compassion, allowing it to ebb and flow, move through your body as it does, touch, community, wailing, singing, receiving singing, all those things that in other cultures, they do much more wailing. And that's a very beautiful way. Unfortunately, a lot in Western culture, there's literally a history of repression, of keening and wailing. And so making sound, going out into the woods and moving your body and making a sound. And if you want to have a safe person with you, that's a good thing. But just paying attention. I'm also going to give a really strong tip as far as the lung meridian. So right here, you can look up lung meridian on the internet. You can hold that place. Also, you can hold your kidney points right in here. That's going to help kind of ground down your body. Getting acupuncture, getting all the things I mentioned, doing yoga, and being out in community. I think each person grieves in a different way, but I think being in community. And I do have a grief class coming up on my website. Because I love to sing to people and help them through their grief by the singing.
Well, after watching this podcast, people may have questions for you. Are you open to that? And if so, should they go to your website?
Mm-hmm. And I do a free, it's called Nurture Your Nervous System, just so people, you know, from podcasts can connect and we can have a live hour together. So that's on my website. My classes are on my website. And I like to make my classes a kind of a low price, so it's a easy entry point. I do have the 5-person groups if people want to have more time. And then I also right now have some in-person retreats coming up in October in Mount Shasta.
That's great.
And I also just finished my audiobook. Right now it's on my website, and it's 6 hours of me sharing my story and more singing medicine.
Do you have a YouTube channel?
I do.
What's that called?
Is it Lansong or Robin Lansong? I think it's Lansong.
What kind of content are you posting there?
I post a lot about creativity, about coming home to yourself. I have interviews with other trauma survivors who have come through, risen to the occasion. I have one coming up where I went down to Oakland, California, and sang to veterans, which was incredibly poignant in terms of, you know, I was abducted by a soldier, shot by a soldier, saved by a soldier. And so to sing to veterans, that really changed my healing and their healing. So that video is coming up, more about my death experience. And I'm also going to move towards things that are really fun, because I want to get across that the goal of healing trauma is to get home to ourselves, to our fun, to eating well, to sensuality. And so I'm going to do a bunch of videos about, I'm going to be a mermaid. I'm the singing mermaid, and I'm swimming in the water, and I come up and I sing to people. So I know that some people, you know, it's like they see me as a war survivor, which is totally true. But I want to get to the point of doing trauma resolution is that you get to have joy and you get to play. So I'm going to have a whole new set of videos that are really super silly and playful.
That's great. Do you have anything else that you're working on that you want us to know about?
Yes. Shiva and all the other deities have big plans for me. So I'm working on 2 art card decks. So making my art, joining it with text around coming to your purpose and trauma resolution. I'm going to record the second part of my audiobook. I'm working on a second book about trauma resolution and about how to heal, and just giving people really, I want to build people's confidence that going into the dark night of the soul is worth it, and that you can come out on the other side. Because a lot of people are hesitant to drop into those difficult emotions because they're concerned that they won't come back out. So this book is about helping growing people's confidence that healing work is worth it.
Robin, before we wrap it up, can you leave us with one last positive message?
Mm-hmm. Can I sing to you?
Sure, I'd love it.
So this is, I'm feeling into like, what's the medicine for you today? So I am away.
Robin, thank you for your song and thank you for being my guest.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks for watching the Jeff Mara podcast. I really appreciate you. Another way to show support is through YouTube memberships. And if you do, there are loyalty badges and other perks depending on your level of membership. All you need to do is click the join button underneath the video to find out more. Thank you for your support.